Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of the Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, and joined alongside me today is not only our good friend producer Manny behind the boards today, but also a guest, and a guest that is a frequent visitor of the show, but one that I haven't been on with in a while. Piper, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
We were just saying in our first take that we had to cut. as many publishers listening to the show can probably relate to, we don't always get it the first time, but it's probably been a little while since you and I have had a chance to chat live on the show, and what a great time to do it. There's a lot of things going on in the news and in the world of digital publishing. I think since the start of the new year, it's kind of interesting to see the juxtaposition of things today versus things maybe a year ago, especially in the the realm of, the incumbent big tech companies and in the world of AI. I can't think of anything that's maybe changed more in terms of perception, but maybe not in terms of reality. I don't know. What's your take on everything?
Yeah, I think things are moving quickly, especially with AI. I think for a lot of publishers, that's, sort of the elephant in the room. And they're wondering, how do I stay relevant? How does this impact me? We're going to talk about one of the articles where, publishers are concerned about losing traffic to the generative search. So I think it's top of mind. But like you said, I don't think we've seen a ton of changes in actual data and traffic and things like that. So yeah, it's something that's top of mind and is important, but we're not seeing a ton of impact yet.
Yeah, it's kind of, I kind of feel like it's whenever you hear that there's a giant storm coming, and you know that there probably is, but yet all you really see outside is maybe a little bit of clouds and some rain. And that's not to say that there's a storm coming, but I do think that, there's a significant amount of change that will occur over the next, probably longer time span than what people realize in terms of user behavior. But in terms of the way that things work and operate, I think things change for publishers probably a little bit quicker than they do for users.
Yeah, definitely.
And so we get into the world of AI right off the bat. Producer Manny, do you want to kick us off with this first story?
Yeah, we got a story coming in from adweek.com where a study conducted by the Reuters Institute, it was found that nearly half of top news websites across 10 countries implemented measures to block OpenAI's web crawlers by the end of 2023, with a quarter extending similar restrictions to Google's AI crawler as well. This analysis, which scrutinized the robots.txt files of 15 prominent news sources ranging from traditional print media to digital-born platforms, highlighted a growing concern.
Quite the study by the Reuters Institute, looking at 15 websites.
15 of the prominent, most prominent websites that they got.
Gotcha.
Legacy print outlets led the charge with 57% blocking AI crawlers, followed closely by broadcasters and digital-born outlets. The move underscores the challenges faced by generative AI technologies, heavily reliant on authentic human-generated content, and raises questions about the future of AI in journalism. With news outlets, particularly Global North, taking decisive steps to protect their content, the industry grapples with balancing technological advancements and the rights of content creators. And I remember that we talked about this story back in September, and I believe it was Adweek as well, but they were saying that roughly 20% of top news sites, now granted this is only from a group of 15 widely reached.
I'm in marketing. I understand these numbers. 15 is a good number because it gives you numbers like 57%, which sound like, wow, that's an odd number. That must have been a big study. If you do 10, the numbers are round. People won't believe it. So
that's very accurate. Very accurate. But I wanted to get your guys' take just because we're starting to see more of these websites bringing up the fact that they're going to be blocking AI crawlers. And is this something that publishers should be more concerned with? I know that a lot of content that is getting trained or getting used to train AI is coming now from sources like Reddit and Twitter. Is this something that publishers should be concerned with?
Numbers aside, Piper, you talk to a lot of larger publishers on a daily basis. What's the take? I guess, how concerned are they about AI stealing their content?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a concern for publishers. But I think for the vast majority of publishers, they don't quite have like the leverage that some of these larger 15 prominent news.
Yeah.
You know, if you're the New York Times, you can block a crawler and then you can have a conversation with them about some type of payment for crawling the content. For smaller publishers, I do think that they're scared, as pretty much everyone online is, about them being able to replicate their content or use the content that they've created to provide search results or something like that, and rather than getting the traffic to their site. My take on it, and this might be wrong, but like I do see a future where there's generative search, but also links to websites. And if you can have your content displayed in that and a link to your site, then you can still drive traffic to your site.
Absolutely.
So that's why if I was a small to medium sized publisher, I probably would not block the crawlers, but that's just my take. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, so a couple things. I agree with you. I think that there's a place in the world for both. And I think you can kind of, we talked about this because, you know, one of the things you brought up was, you know, the New York Times can negotiate you know, a deal with someone like OpenAI, which they are. They are doing that. They're also suing them simultaneously for the exact same thing. It's almost hard to imagine.
Attacking it from both sides.
Yeah, literally attacking it from both sides. And I think whenever you look at the method that they're using here, where you're blocking a robot's text file, even if you do it by crawler name, it's the equivalent of putting a "Don't walk on my grass" sign up in your yard. You know, it's like a recommendation. And you're going to have a really hard time getting the police to show up and like, you know, hassle those kids to get off your lawn. And so, you know, despite the fact that I don't think that you should do it, because I think it's more likely you actually, you know, block, there's a lot of crawlers that are out there that you do want scanning your site, Googlebot, Google's ad bot. And, I would say a lot of publishers are probably more likely to cause, you know, just damage to themselves doing it rather than, you know, doing anything to block AI, which realistically it doesn't need a crawler to get your site. You know, you can, in the same way that I can load content in a browser, you can think of something like a Chrome extension that you might use, but there's, you know, crawlers out there that don't look like crawlers. They just look like website visits and they can just download the HTML and then get it that way. So there's nothing that they really can do to stop somebody from getting public content off the web. That being said, I do think that one of the things to think about quite a bit with this is the originality of content. So you think about something like news. News is particularly impacted because it's a bit... And it's why news content generally is, you know, going to earn a lot less than really unique original content, is because it's a commodity. Something happens, you know, the president slips and falls, or, you know, like the latest Instagram influencer accidentally has a hot mic and says something terrible. Those types of thing, I don't know why it has to be negative. It's just the news, you know?
Yeah.
but the things that stand out there that anybody can write about it because everybody knows about it. So, it's really hard not to sort of like, you know, fall into that and to be something that can be taken by AI. That being said, if I have particular knowledge of, some kind of new system that, you know, is available, and maybe I'm an engineer that is the only person that understands, you know, at a deep level how it works or something, explaining that and putting that out there, a machine can't come up with that sort of thing because it has no input for it. I am the input for it. And so I do think that that unique knowledge is not something that's going to be taken anytime soon. And I do think that there'll be a lot of challenges around that. I do think that the AI companies are really apprehensive about falling into those traps. So I think originality of content really does kind of, you know, underscore sort of, the fact that, yeah, I don't imagine this is an immediate threat for, publishers that are not in the news or sort of commodity content space. What percentage of publishers do you think of this as an originality of content issue versus a, like existential threat?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know if I have an answer for you. But I would say most of the publishers that I speak to are really trying to focus on making that sure their content is original, unique, has their own voice, their own tone. So I would say they're more so focused on that rather than an existential crisis.
Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed in creating content here recently was there'll be certain articles or something, or, you know, a blog or something that we want to write. And I'll ask ChatGPT or one of the writing GPTs to produce it. And if I read it and I go, this thing lacks substance, like all the details, everything important is missing. Mm-hmm. I may like prompt it to do better. And if that information still isn't there, it gives you a really good indication of whether or not like the content that you are imagining like creating or putting out there is actually worth creating, because mm-hmm. if the AI can basically generate it, then like, why do you need to, like, why does it need to exist? It can already mm-hmm. exist. If you just happen to be the first, it doesn't really add any value anymore. Our good friend Gerald, a data scientist here, he famously said the cost of content has gone to zero. And so just there's no value in creating content. The value is really in producing something that's unique, like in terms of information. So
yeah. And that doesn't mean that you can't use ChatGPT to help you with that.
Absolutely.
It just means that the idea and the originality and all of that should be unique, something unique.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in most cases what I've done is I've taken what I thought was like an article lacking substance, and then I've literally just taken that as my first draft. And then in the areas where I think something is lacking, I'll go in and say, okay. Sometimes I may have data in a CSV and say, hey, summarize this information mm-hmm. in the context of this article. And it's, again, it's like you're saving yourself time. It's like,
so much time.
Yeah, you're dictating to an employee. And speaking of employees, we have some employees of Google here recently that have been speaking out and talking to, I guess, the internet at large, the people that make the internet, publishers and people running websites. And they had some interesting things to say about what they want to do with their search algorithm. Producer Manny, you want to fill us in a little bit more on what Danny Sullivan, Trader, not a lot of people know this. Danny Sullivan used to be work on the publisher media side. He was an SEO journalist. And probably about a decade ago, he flipped and he went to the dark side over at Google.
Yeah, so we do have some news regarding Danny Sullivan. So it's a story coming out of SEORoundtable.com, where it seems like Google wants to reward the best content, no matter the size. Now, Google Search Liaison has recently affirmed the company's commitment to valuing content quality over the site size in search rankings. This comes in response to criticism highlighted by Giselle Navarro and Danny Ashton of HouseFresh, emphasizing the need for a more equitable approach in recognizing and rewarding outstanding content. Regardless of the publisher's size, Sullivan's engagement with the issue underscores Google's ongoing efforts to refine its search algorithms, ensuring that they are more inclusive and representative of the best web has to offer. Now, they do say that they're trying to kind of like highlight more of these smaller sites, but at the same time, we're starting to see Google have deals with Reddit, where Reddit has inked a lucrative content licensing agreement with Google valued at approximately $60 million annually to fuel the tech giant's artificial intelligence endeavors. This strategic partnership, announced on February 22nd, signifies Reddit's ambitious push for new revenue avenues as it gears up for highly anticipated IPO, targeting to a valuation of $10 billion, with its eyes set on diversifying income sources in a competitive digital landscape. Reddit's move also highlights the broader AI industry's quest to be to vary training data sets. And I kind of wanted to see how you guys thought of these stories and whether it's something that's kind of connecting, because especially with Google pushing their SGE experience, so when you kind of search something up, there's already information at the top of line without even getting into the search results. Do you think that this whole idea of we're trying to highlight smaller sites versus larger sites might just be kind of more of a front than anything else?
Well, If you read the article and followed what happened along, it was actually really interesting. So Giselle Navarro and Danny Ashton from House Fresh wrote this article about how they think that smaller sites should be getting, should be doing better in the rankings, but big sites tend to get the number one spots. So then Danny Sullivan responded to it, and then SEO Roundtable picked up on the article, Reddit picked up on the article, and then when you search for the original article on House Fresh for the title of it, Reddit was actually ranking above House Fresh, which was just like so ironic, because here's Danny Sullivan saying, no, we want to do it. We're committed to helping the smaller guys who are higher quality show up in the search rankings. And then within a couple hours, those, huge websites were outranking them, which was just interesting. And I think a lot of publishers were frustrated because there wasn't a ton of substance as to what they're doing. It was just like, we're hoping to get better.
Yeah.
Which leaves a lot of publishers asking the question, what do I need to do in order to improve my rankings? Or is it always going to be a situation where these bigger sites just have more domain authority, whether or not that's real or not? And how do they compete? So I thought it was really interesting and ironic, the whole thing.
Well, you nailed it. And domain authority is definitely real. They have Google's first patent was on it. And I think it's something that does drive a fair amount of misunderstanding in circles of SEO and just general understanding of what that means. But I think when you see things like Reddit or Wikipedia being number one, I think there's probably something else to that from the standpoint of Google pays for an API or a pipe, you can think of it, that goes directly to the content of Wikipedia and Reddit. And it used to just be Wikipedia. And they pay an alarmingly small amount of money, which is insane for both of those things. Reddit wants to be a public company and is trying to figure out ways to make money without ever having to involve sort of like the content creation aspect of it. Because there's like been attempts for Reddit moderators to unionize. Have you seen that?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like they would have gone public by now if not for that. That's why there was the moderator lockout or whatever it was a while back. And so I do think that what you're going to find is that Google is doing a number of things that they see as critical to their, their future. So I think they see a lot of the changes in our space is existential threats to search. And these are not things that they're doing to necessarily cut publishers out. These are things that they're doing to try to survive. And they're trying to pull content from places where content doesn't exist. Now, what happens when you do that at large scale is that when you're trying to find content and you maybe default to these places where you can typically find answers for everything, that means that whenever you maybe have better answers from something that is, kind of your fallback, you can think of it. I would imagine that, you may want the higher quality, smaller sites to rank above the Reddits and the Wikipedias of the world. An algorithm can only be so good at that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I imagine, especially just the refinement part of that is it probably, even with all the data that they have, pretty a long tail thing, because you think about like seasonality trends and different things. What's a good search result on Monday, February, whatever. That's probably not necessarily indicative of how good of a result it is all the time, because maybe that was a day that everybody really cared about, space launch, and I don't know. So I do think that this is something that publishers should be concerned about, but for a different reason. We've traditionally seen that Google sees diversity as a strength, from the standpoint of if there was only 100 publishers getting all the traffic, they could band together and negotiate against Google. But if you had, millions, which there are, makes it very, very hard. And also takes the power away from, single publishers, and their most featured publishers are Wikipedia and Reddit, and they have deals with both of them. So I do think that as a smaller publisher, you're not in really a bad spot here. I don't think Google's trying to cut you out. But I do think that you should pay attention to the fact that Google is worried enough about the future of their business that they're doing things like this. And that should speak to, the fact that like Google might not always be as dominant of a provider for your business as it is today. And so it should, if you're not already, be the kind of kick in the pants to go and find and explore different avenues for audiences and things along those lines. And exploring doesn't mean finding success. It just means, everybody can find different ways to get audiences and traffic. And I think borrowing it and renting it from Google has been really convenient for a long time. But if it's no longer serving you, I think you have to look at other options.
Yeah, and I just have one thing to add. I'm going to sort of draw some lines between Google, Reddit, and the helpful content update. I do think Reddit is a great source of information because there's no fluff, right? If you're looking for, how do I change my car oil? You probably watch a YouTube video, but let's say, you're just trying to find some information. We know that there's some blogs out there that talk about, their children and what they did this weekend before getting to the meat and potatoes of like, how do I actually do this thing? And I think
you're not paying the vacation. All right. Under my 87 Buick.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think, we can look at the content within Reddit and especially how, there's lots of people contributing and there's upvotes. And so you can see what's the most useful answer.
Yeah.
And we have seen Reddit ranking pretty well. Weren't you saying it's like the number one search is something with Reddit on the end?
Yep. It's like almost everything that you look for that is like, I think it's like a verb or a noun or something where the next, people also search is Reddit.
Reddit,
is the
next
word afterwards.
So I understand why Google has this partnership with Reddit. But I also think what publishers can take away from this is it's really important that you understand the intent of the content that you're writing. And why is the user coming to that page? And are they able to find that information easily?
Yeah.
Because if you're spending, half of the post talking about your trip in your Buick to Miami and someone's trying to figure out how to change their oil, they're not going to be happy with that and then go search somewhere else.
Absolutely.
For it.
And I also think that there's a certain amount of entitlement that we've had in the world of publishing that has kind of crept up on us a little bit from the standpoint of, one of the real revelations of blogging was the internet 2.0 gave everybody the ability to share with the world information and knowledge that they had. And that was really, really valuable. And then over the last, decade, probably more so in the last 5 years, you have this business opportunity that's presented from it where it's like, I'm now an authority on something. Mm-hmm. So now if somebody wants to ask my opinion about like the best Wi-Fi setup at home, maybe I'll throw in some Amazon links or I'll promote something that I think is great, but maybe I have a financial interest in. And that's one of those things that, I don't have a right to an audience. I don't have, I'm not entitled to be able to earn money from, being inauthentic with the way that I present information to people. And I think that's another reason why people have gone to Reddit for questions around this stuff is they're looking for authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that, that's at a premium right now. And I think about the places that I go for just about everything. Like my wife is like, she's even better about this than me. But if you're trying to find out, like, especially making purchasing decisions, even about small things, it's like, it's really hard to trust almost any website.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've kind of conditioned yourself to think like there's an agenda here or they're trying to sell me something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do look for sources of information that, seemingly don't have a financial interest to play. And I think that you can definitely establish yourself as being that to your audience. It might take a little time, but you can definitely do it.
Mm-hmm.
Producer Manny, do we have anything else on the docket today?
Yeah, we do. We got a couple more stories coming from adweek.com. The first one we're going to explore is how publishers are preparing for Google's AI-enhanced search, since that's been such a big topic amongst publishers. So with Google's recent rollout of SGE, it sparked widespread concern amongst publishers who fear the drastic reduction in organic search traffic and subsequent digital advertising revenue. This initiative AI-driven feature poses a potential threat to traditional search dynamics, prompting a reevaluation of content strategies across the publishing industry. As publishers brace for an impact that could slash their organic traffic by up to 80%, efforts are being directed towards enhancing direct engagement channels, crafting AI-resistant content, and refining search optimization tactics to align with SGE's framework. Amidst this digital upheaval, the imperative for publishers to navigate the shifting landscape involves legal considerations, innovative content creation, and strategic SEO adjustments. Additionally, we're also going to take a look at the next era of subscription and how three trends are reshaping publishers' paid products. Because in the wake of TechCrunch's subscription product closure, the publishing industry finds itself at a crossroads, yet the future of the digital subscriptions appears promising. Despite a slowdown in growth, there's an uptick in the median active subscription, reflecting a robust inclination towards digital-only content. Publishers are now embracing more nuanced subscription models, prioritizing consumer needs with flexible pricing and tailored offerings. This shift is supported by legal advancements that protect consumers from aggressive subscription tactics, empowering readers, and redefining the subscription market dynamic. With the advent of dynamic paywalls and machine learning, publishers are not just reacting to consumer behavior, but are actively shaping a more sustainable and consumer-centric future for digital content. Now, I know that this is a huge concern with publishers, but Piper, have you seen or noticed any publishers that are coming to you, or that this is a huge problem? Is there any solution that you can maybe attest to regarding these subscription models?
Oh, subscription models. Okay. I thought we were going to talk about the other one first, but
it's a little bit of both. A little bit of both.
Yeah. I mean, once again, like I was talking about when we first started, I think for small to medium sized publishers, I don't think subscription models are the answer. I think if you're the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or something of that nature, it's easy to require a subscription to access the content. But for a lot of our publishers,
easy on in the sense that it's taken them a decade to earn revenue.
You know what I mean? Like, but I think for our publishers, I don't really know if that's the direction that I would go. I do think that there is the ability, if you have a very loyal group of users who return regularly to the site, and I can think a few of those publishers in my head, oftentimes they'll do a subscription where they can go ad free and maybe get some, you know, unique content emailed to them and things like that. And it works, but it's usually a very small percentage of their user base, and they're not blocking content to their other readers. They're just monetizing it via ads so that users can still view their content, engage with the content, and the publisher gets paid via the ad revenue.
I kind of like the subscription thing is an interesting one, because it's never really, it's kind of becomes a trend in every like sort of era of media to some degree. Is always only really relevant to a slice of the overall sort of market. And the reason is because it's like, you think about like the grocery store. It's like, how many grocery stores would you pay a subscription to?
Costco.
Oh, that's the only one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just because it saves you money. It's like, I mean, like there's not really a good example of that in terms of like publishing, but you know, I think it's something like a Whole Foods or, you know, like a specialty organic market where it's like, all it takes is one of them to not charge a subscription for me to be like, well, I guess I won't go to Whole Foods. Like, I don't need that, you know, because most things I can just get, you know, for free. And I kind of think of the same thing when it comes to subscriptions where it's like, unless there's something I absolutely have to have or there's a value, which doesn't really apply to publishing the same much. It's just a model that's really hard to get people to want to commit to. And especially now with streaming and stuff where you are paying for media subscriptions, you know, in another realm where the content is truly something you can't get elsewhere, it makes it a pretty tough go. But this has been a battle that publishers, I get that they want to sell subscriptions, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
And I get Google wanting to put search generative experiences in their products. It's because they're worried about ChatGPT. But the thing is you're not ChatGPT. And if your concern is that you're going to lose business to people using chatbots and things like that for answers, you've already lost. You know, you turning your search engine into a chatbot is not going to change that. And I don't think that you can make I wouldn't feel comfortable with the argument that if we're an incumbent, so we can just make a chat bot out of our search engine and people will just be satisfied with that. I think behavior has already started to shift. And so I think Google's smart enough to realize that. So I don't think the search, generative search, dynamic answers or anything like that, which I think Quora was doing for a second, they might still be. If you ask a question, Quora would actually show up as the number one answer from answers that it generated for other people asking the same question, which mm-hmm. sounds really smart, but I've found it to not be helpful because mm-hmm. it's like, this is the information that's already available. Like what we were talking about earlier, it's writing something that probably is elsewhere. So it's like, I'd rather get it, you know, from the publisher directly.
Yeah,
and so I do find that that's something that I don't think people want in search. And so I don't think that it's something that has traction at the moment, but.
I agree with that. I was just thinking about different things that I search for. And for example, this last weekend I was searching for a recipe and I could have asked ChatGPT for the recipe and it could have given it to me. But part of my process was looking at the reviews of people that had made the recipe and their comments on it. And the New York Times Cooking does a really good job because often the comments are helpful hints like, oh, actually do 2 cups of this instead of one. And so I always like digging into the recipes that way and then reading the reviews from people and the notes. And sure, I could have used the recipe from ChatGPT, but it's almost not as credible or trusted yeah. as going through the different sites. So I can see it being useful in some cases, like, you know, what's 10 divided by 12? But I think if you're looking for other information, there is a trust factor and you want to see where it came from.
Yeah.
Or at least for me.
Yeah, no, and I agree 1,000%. And it's one of the things that I push back on a lot when I've heard people say that, you know, like generative AI is going to, you know, slowly eat away at search until, you know, like it's the majority of like how people get information. But I did an experiment probably, I don't know, 3-4 months ago where I was like, everything that I search, I also want to ask myself, can I put this into a chatbot instead? Mm-hmm. And the majority of things I actually didn't want to do that because I want the context from the standpoint of like you mentioned the recipe thing. It's like, you know, I also want to understand, like it gives me a recipe. I'm like curious enough to know, like, did you piece this together from multiple yeah. places? Like, is this actually correct? And then also like, why are you using milk instead of like butter? I've seen ones before where maybe you use like butter and egg. This one only has like milk. Is this supposed mm-hmm. to be like, is this like some kind of one that's like for people that have egg allergies? Like,
right.
I want to know where I'm getting it from and maybe even the perspective of it. So it's like if you're vegan and you ask for a recipe and it gives you one that's, you know, and you ask for it to be vegan, you look at it and you go, that doesn't seem like it's going to be mm-hmm. vegan to me. I need to maybe check the ingredients. But if you go to a vegan blog, like there's a certain level of there's an expectation that it's going right. to be already sort of safe there. So I find myself maybe more curious than other people when it comes to like how I get the information. But sometimes I really do want the search experience. I want to see what information is out there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm not actually just looking for an answer. I want to know the why behind it. Mm-hmm. And some people aren't that way. But I do think that there's certain things that the more critical they are or the sort of it's when you want an answer to a question, a lot of times it's like, it's an experience. It's like one of the things Google talks about is like the user journey of like, what do you search in a row? Like, mm-hmm. how much do Wi-Fi routers cost? What's Wi-Fi 6? What's the difference between Wi-Fi 6 yeah. and Wi-Fi 6E? Like, how do you find an Ethernet cord that like has a splitter on it? It's like, this person's trying to solve a problem. And it's like, if you were to just ask, like, what's the best Wi-Fi router for my home? You know, you might get an answer from ChatGPT that, you know, you're kind of like, all right, that seems like an answer, but I don't know if it's actually right for what I'm looking for. And you can educate yourself to where it's like collective information. You're a lot smarter than a, you know, word guessing super bot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so do you think that the combination of the two stories with SGE and that publishers are starting to kind of pick up on these subscription models is kind of a reactionary thing to the potential threat of losing the organic traffic?
Subscriptions, not so much. I think that that's a natural occurrence. I mean, these things come in waves. Our audience has heard me talk about bundling and rebundling a lot. It's a global theory for everything. And I think we're entering a new rebundling phase that could last a decade. And because of that, I don't think subscriptions is necessarily something that's impacted by AI directly in this sense. But the search generative experience, that's definitely Google's, is very reactionary. And Google's smart. They test things. And I also think that they're under the gun right now. So I don't think that they're going to get as much rope maybe internally in terms of you know, running with something that doesn't show promise or doesn't make the money that they have in the past. I don't know. Is that your sense as well, Piper?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I don't think subscriptions are the answer. I think, yeah, this is just the cycle that we're in. And, you know, publishers always tell me like, oh, it'd be great if I had a, it'd be great if I had a subscription and, you know, people would pay and I could put up a paywall. And it's very, very rare that I've seen that work.
Yeah.
And so I would not recommend it to our publishers unless you are the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, CNN.
And I'd still argue if I was running those, I'd put ads on the site and just
Money. How many websites are there out there that you put in a URL and get behind the paywall?
Yeah.
And they could have made money on that user had they had some ads there and let them read the content.
There's very few that I'll even give my email to for a free access version if you block it just by having an account. And I do think that, I think you nailed it from the standpoint of subscriptions. I don't think are necessarily the answer for smaller publishers. I mean, I've worked in marketing for almost over two decades. And my experience has been there's nothing that's more depressing than trying to market a product to an audience or to a group of people that just don't want it.
Yeah.
And it's like you can do the best marketing job in the world and it just does not matter. And on the flip side, if you have a product that everybody wants, you can make every marketing mistake in the book and still like have a great business. And so again, it comes back to the content. And that's the other thing about building an audience. If you make a content for an audience, over a long enough time span, you don't even have to be good at marketing it. People will find it, especially if it's unique. So I do think that publishers, again, it's like, it's easy to say, hard to do, but yeah, focus on the product that you make for your audience. And I think, yeah, that above all else will keep you on the straight and narrow. And that's it. Pipes, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, that was fun. Publisher thanks Lab. For having me.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back again soon. It's been fun going through some of the new stuff and picking your brain about what publishers are saying and how they feel about some of this stuff, because sometimes being a publisher can be a lonely job.
It is, yeah.
I think it's nice to kind of be able to get your finger on the pulse and say, am I crazy? and most of the time the answer is yes, but not always. So we want to thank everybody for joining us again on the Publisher Lab.